From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Bolivia's former interim president, Jeanine Añez, has been arrested on charges of terrorism, sedition, and conspiracy to commit a coup. Arrest warrants were issued for at least a dozen political figures involved in the 2019 ouster of former President Evo Morales, leader of the Movement Towards Socialism or MAS party. Just before her arrest, Añez tweeted, "I denounce to Bolivia and the world that in an act of abuse and political persecution, the MAS government has ordered my arrest. They accuse me of participating in a coup that never happened. I pray for Bolivia and all of its people." My guest is Thomas Becker, supervisor in human rights practice at the University Network. He's an attorney and activist who spent most of the past decade working on human rights issues in Bolivia. Welcome to the program, Thomas.
Thank you so much.
So tell me, first of all, the charges that Añez is facing, are those directly related to the coup?
So it's not clear. Certainly, it's part of it is the coup. There was a coup in Bolivia, despite I think there's been this in the international community, there's been confusion on whether or not this was a coup. But Evo Morales stepped down in a very undemocratic nature, as did several of the people that were the next in line in secession after receiving death threats, after family members were kidnapped, after the military suggested that they step down, after the police mutinied. So there was a coup. And so part of this is in relationship to her role in the coup, but also to the human rights violations that took place immediately after she took power. In her first week alone, you know, she oversaw two separate massacres and her government carried out really some unprecedented abuses over the next year.
And you authored a report about some of those incredibly horrific massacres called They Shot Us Like Animals. That particular interim government that Jeanine Añez headed seems like it was a very dark period for Bolivia. Has there been justice on what took place in those past couple of years?
No, unfortunately, the families have sought justice for since the day of the massacres. I was actually in the site of the first massacre only a few days after she took power. And since that day, they've sought justice and it did not advance at all while she was president. In fact, those who tried to bring cases were harassed, re-victimized. They would stop them in their home, like go into their homes. They would stop them in the streets, harass them, arrest them. So there wasn't a climate where there could be justice. There is a new government now that has started some legal processes against those involved in the coup and various human rights abuses. And there's steps, they're moving forward, but unfortunately it's still moving slowly. And now you have this backlash from, more the right wing saying, no, this is political persecution, which is really slowing down, calls for justice, unfortunately.
So let's actually take a step back and tell us how Jeanine Añez went from being interim president to not, and how Evo Morales has returned to Bolivia, although not as president. What happened in that transition period?
So, Jeanine Añez is really... was pretty unknown as a senator in Bolivia. I think the only thing she was known for is that she had tweeted out that indigenous rituals were satanic and several other quite racist statements against indigenous people. So she was relatively unknown other than kind of these very problematic racist posts and on social media. Evo Morales was forced to step down, and Jeanine Añez was a second vice president of the Senate. In Bolivia, when a president steps down, it then goes to the vice president, then to the president of Congress, the president of Senate, then the president of Congress. All four of those people resigned under duress. The president of Congress, for instance, they kidnapped his brother, tortured him, they burned his sister's home, and they sexually assaulted his niece. And they threatened him, and he resigned explicitly because he was under threat. So after it ends this secession, it then goes to Congress, and Congress has to decide who will become the next president. What the right wing did, the opposition, they blocked Congress. They completely circumvented this step and had a meeting with members of the Catholic Church, the Brazilian ambassador, and other right wing opposition leaders. And they decided they were going to name Añez as the next president. They used kind of their rationale was, Well, since the presidents of Congress and Senate resigned, we'll go to the vice presidents of Congress or Senate. But they ended up actually skipping over.
Hang on, Thomas, one sec.
Sorry, there's another.
Okay, just repeat that last bit.
So their rationale was to go from, you know, because it ended with the presidents of Congress and Senate, to go to the vice president of Congress and Senate. But unfortunately, what they did is they skipped over the Moss vice president of Congress, who was also receiving death threats, and went to the second vice president. So even by their own rationale, you know, kind of trying to justify it after the fact, there was nothing legal about her being put into power as president. She was not a legitimate president.
So how did she then step down?
Really from widespread mobilizations, from social movements rising up, an interim president has to call elections within 90 days. She did not do that. She repeatedly delayed them, almost an entire year. But what ended up happening is that the social movements led by unions and coca farmers and just indigenous communities mobilized all across the country into these, you know, took over the main roads, the main highways throughout the country, and really forced elections. I think it was mainly that. And then a lot of pressure eventually from the international community. As her human rights abuses started to come out, the international community really started to question whether this was a legitimate president and whether her actions were healthy for democracy. So eventually she was forced to call elections and actually ran as a candidate illegally, but lost. Actually was forced to, she ended up stepping down because she was polling so poorly. So she stepped down just right before the elections.
So now she and her fellow coup plotters are pushing this idea that there's political persecution. You mentioned that in the international media that is being echoed. I'm looking at, you know, a CNN article that called the charges vague and that suggested that her allegation, you know, might be potentially true, and also questioning whether or not there really was a coup that took place. It talks about how Morales stepped down and how Áñez allowed for these elections to take place as if she was simply ushering democracy back in. But isn't it important for a post-coup government, particularly one that has a history of being a left-leaning government, therefore a target in, you know, Latin American country, to hold these sorts of forces accountable? We've seen in countries like Venezuela and many other Latin American nations that the right-wing forces will use any means necessary to grab power, and they keep popping back up. And accountability is important.
Absolutely. I mean, Bolivia has had more coups in the last century than any country on earth. And I think since the mid-1800s, there's been, I believe, 196 either coups or revolutions in Bolivia. So certainly there is a cycle of undemocratic behavior that needs to be broken, and there needs to be accountability. And I think, you know, I think there are nuggets of truth in what, you know, CNN is saying. I think that the charges for sedition and terrorism are quite vague. But these have been the charges that have been on the book since the dictatorships. And I, you know, my personal opinion is Congress needs to write new laws that are more specific. But it certainly is sedition when you undemocratically remove a president from power and install yourself. So, you know, I think by the most basic terms, this is sedition. While we can like chip away at like the nuances of the law that have been on the book, like I said, they've been on the books for years. At the end of the day, this government, this interim government, came to power, said that they were hunting political opponents like animals, and persecute. I mean, the irony that they are saying that they are being politically persecuted when their government arrested something, there's various numbers out there, but roughly 1,500 political opponents for sedition and terrorism. By the way, the folks that were arrested for sedition and terrorism were people that had, you know, WhatsApp groups, messages in WhatsApp that said what took place was a coup. That was sufficient to arrest a person for terrorism. Another person, Orestes Sotomayor, was the domain owner of a website that published an article criticizing the government, and he was arrested for sedition and terrorism. So this interim government persecuted opponents really on levels that we haven't seen since Bolivia became a democracy nearly 40 years ago. And so there needs to be accountability. Otherwise, this culture of impunity, this culture of undemocratic transitions or coups is going to continue. And something I should add is, because I think there's this new kind of 21st century coup. You know, you can't get away with the coups of the 70s, where I think in the US we have this kind of stereotype that it's, you know, this mustachioed general driving down the street in a tank, and that's a coup. And anything short of that cannot be an undemocratic transition. And certainly what's taken place was a coup. Just because Jeanine Añez is not a military leader, her transition was not legal, and she oversaw really unprecedented abuses during her reign.
What can you tell us about how the Biden administration has responded to what has happened in Bolivia? Of course, Biden has only been in power for a few months, but we know that, of course, the U.S. has often, if not directly, fomented coups throughout Latin America's history, at least supported them or happily tolerated the outcomes. What has Biden said or not said in response to what has transpired in Bolivia?
Well, just to kind of set the stage, the Trump administration certainly, not only supported, not only did not denounce the coup, they supported the Añez government and were silent during these really horrific abuses. There was hope that during the Biden administration came to power, there would be a friendlier approach. But within the last week or so, the State Department released a statement condemning the arrest of Añez. And hinting that it was political persecution as well,
wow.
Which is really unfortunate, particularly after the silence of, really just black and white. I mean, there's no question. Human Rights Watch, most of the major human rights institutions in the world have documented the political persecution that took place during Añez, and the U.S. government was silent.
Not to mention that the U.S. government itself risked being overrun by insurrectionists who might be facing charges of sedition. Biden should be, facing the potential of, or at least should be thinking about the irony of the fact that his own government almost didn't exist if the Trump people had their way.
No, absolutely. I mean, the irony, you can't make this stuff up because they attempted, certainly these rioters took over the Capitol. This is a woman and a group of people that took over an entire government and ran a government for a year. This is seditious activity. It's sedition 101. But again, the administration really has approached this in a problematic way that's really dousing, I think, a lot of fuel onto an already out of control fire on the ground. A lot of these calls, her initial statements of this is political persecution was really kind of fringe. But it was really legitimized when certain members of the international community, including the State Department, supported what she said. It gave it legs. And now people are really, there's real conflict in Bolivia because of this. And I think it's important to kind of talk about the key players here, because there's a man, Mark Feierstein, who has been working, he's part of the Obama administration, allegedly he was an advisor to Biden. And he was hired by the Añez government, his organization, CLS Strategies, about a year and a half ago. The language was to help with more or less the language. I'm shortening it because it's quite long, but to clean up the interim government's image in terms of democracy, elections, and human rights. And CLS Strategies was the first to be punished for sharing fake news. So they were creating all these fake accounts saying, with hashtag, no, it's not a coup, or it's fraud, or this is democratic, and sharing fake news. And they were punished for this. This is a person who is an advisor to the Biden administration. So it's not a surprise in some ways that this is how the State Department's reacting, because these are the folks that are passing information on and really lobbying for the right-wing forces in the country, in Bolivia.
What are the charges that the government of Luis Arce, who is the president right now of Bolivia, and of course he was essentially Evo Morales's the successor in MAS, what are the challenges that he faces? I wonder if, I imagine that as Bolivia's new president, he faces some of the similar challenges that democratic post-coup governments in Latin America face when they do try to hold coup plotters accountable, which is that you see the international and right-wing and Western media all of a sudden discover their voice when it comes to condemning human rights violations and showing the targeting of coup plotters as human rights violation when they seem blind to real human rights violations under right-wing governments. Is Luis Arce facing that same sort of double standard?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, as you mentioned, this is nothing new. This has been kind of what the U.S. government has done forever. And they're doing it right now. And it's really unfortunate because I think there is a moment, there's been really tense relations between the United States and Bolivia. And I think the Lucho, he goes by Lucho, the Luis Arce government has really extended a lot of olive branches, and I think is really trying to reconcile in Bolivia. But, you know, you have this radical right wing that is then backed by the United States and backed by right wing forces throughout Latin America. And it's undermining these efforts, and it's really pushing them into a corner, which makes transition from a coup quite difficult and holding people accountable quite difficult. I mean, Bolivia is still, you know, Lucho won with over 50%, beating the second place candidate, doubling his votes, basically. You know, there's still
right, there were
a very
multiple
strong
candidates, so by winning over 50%, yes, that's pretty significant.
Oh, it's, I mean, it was, you know, by Bolivian standards, an absolute landslide. But you still have a critical mass of far right-wing folks in Bolivia. You know, historically, pre-Evo Morales, it was always run by people that looked like me, you know, though they, you know, really, at the end of the day, gringos. In fact, the president before him was known as El Gringo. You know, these are people from the economic elite, people who really can trace their history back to the Spanish, and have treated them, though they are the majority, the indigenous majority, as second-class citizens. A lot of this changed during Evo Morales. Certainly, like, there were problems with the Evo Morales government. I'm not a politician. I've criticized Morales. I'll criticize all governments whenever they commit abuses. But a lot of that changed during Morales. But during this time, you had this animosity that built up by the right, who, for the first time in history, was not in power. And once they got this taste of power over the last year or so, now they're mobilized. And they're angry, and they are really, I mean, they've shown signs that they're not going to give Lucho an inch to do anything. And so this government is really going to struggle to hold people accountable. I think they're going to continue to try to, and the families and the victims are certainly going to try to, but they've encountered a lot of roadblocks, unfortunately. And the U.S. is perpetuating it.
We see these kinds of things unfolding in so many countries. I mentioned Venezuela, of course, Brazil. We've seen them in so many Latin American nations. Let's talk about how Bolivia has weathered the pandemic with all of the political instability. Has the coronavirus pandemic made matters more complicated? Does it also present yet another challenge to Luis Arce?
Well, like a lot of authoritarian governments across the world, when the pandemic hit, this was just a gift to despots. And the Áñez government used this to crack down on any dissent. They passed wild laws that spreading misinformation about anything, they used the pandemic, misinformation about the pandemic, but any misinformation was, you know, seditious. And so they started throwing people in jail. They attacked people on the streets that were out. So they used the pandemic as an excuse to really crack down more. And Bolivia was hit really hard. It had for a while the third highest death rate in the world, in part because of extreme, you know, mismanagement by the Áñez government. There was an entire, you know, corruption scandal where they were selling respirators or purchasing respirators radically above market value and all this stuff. So Luis Arce inherited a really messy situation, and the country's struggling still. I think they've, you know, moved fast on the vaccines. They've gotten Russian vaccines. They're getting Chinese vaccines.
And I believe through COVAX, they've gotten some vaccines donated.
Yes. So they're doing better than they were, 6 months ago. But you know, the base is here, and they're catching up in a lot of ways. And it's a poor country. You know, it for years was the poorest country in South America, that poorest country in America, or Latin America, or South America. Sorry. And so they really are still struggling, and he's going to have to deal with that and a radical right wing, and you know, what appears to be a U.S. government that's not particularly open to normalizing relations.
What is the economic situation in Bolivia? I imagine exacerbated by the pandemic, like most countries on the planet have been. Again, as you mentioned, this is a poor country, and a lot of progressive Latin American governments, or at least left-leaning Latin American governments, often are stymied by, you know, falling, you know, by the fact that the conventional measures of the capitalist economy show them to be failing. And is that the case in Bolivia?
Well, so Bolivia has the largest informal economy in the world. So it's quite difficult. You know, you can't implement the same sort of restrictions in the way you could in here in the United States or other areas. And folks are just poor. So, you know, like you have to go to the market to feed your families. It's such a state of desperation. You know, you have to kind of weather the fact that you might get sick because there are not alternatives. They are certainly trying to implement work around these challenges, but they're going to have challenges. I mean, it's so incredibly poor. They have such limited access to the vaccines. Certainly, you know, the global north has been not so great about, you know, sharing, we'll say. It's going to be quite tough. But I think that they are handling it as well as they can in this situation. But they've been dealt a really poor deck of cards, and it's going to be an uphill battle for months.
So finally, what about solidarity from the United States here? The U.S., although it has a history of supporting coups, our governments have a history of supporting coups in Latin America. We also have a rich history of grassroots American groups supporting anti-coup efforts, supporting grassroots movements within Latin America. Of course, the U.S. is today struggling like it hasn't in a long time economically, so people are certainly distracted. But is there a solidarity movement here on Bolivia?
Certainly, particularly in DC, you know, the ex-minister of government, interior minister, went and visited DC and there were protests all over. You know, I think there's a lot of spaces for folks to mobilize. I think the main thing is this is a coup and folks need to know it. You know, I think there's a debate still over, is this a coup? This is a coup and that needs to be in the discourse. This is not a transition. She's not an interim president. She was an illegal president. So I think it starts with actually using the right language. It starts with pressuring, you know, social movements pressuring. You know, a lot of times I don't think the U.S. government is the space to do it, but there are progressive Congress and people and senators that have spoken out and pressing them to push back on the State Department making these statements. I think there's a space to hold accountable the Interior Minister and the Defense Minister, who after the massacres and after Lucho I fled to the United States and are allegedly, at least, you know, according to the most recent information we have, living in Florida. And this is a pattern. Just to give a little context, I've worked for, you know, a dozen years on a case against Bolivia's ex-president and defense minister who also fled to Florida. And we won a lawsuit against them. Actually, it was the first lawsuit against a living ex-president ever in the United States for human rights violations for carrying out similar massacres. They fled to Florida. These two ministers from Añez's government have fled to Florida. I mean, this is the problem, is we become a safe haven for murderers and despots after they carry out these horrible abuses. And so I think really mobilizing people around these folks is an important step.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Thomas, for joining us today. We'll keep our eye on what is happening in Bolivia on our program. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Thomas Becker, supervisor in human rights practice at the University Network. He's an attorney and activist who spent most of the past decade working on human rights issues in Bolivia. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.